All right, outstanding. We'll get back at it, Jerry.
All right.
We're talking about Resolution 17106, annexation of what will become known as Iron Bridge in Huxley.
Correct, and this involves all consenting property owners. It's located a quarter mile north of the city of Huxley's current corporate limits, north of Ballard Golf and Country Club, on the west side of 550th Avenue in Palatine Township. Annexation's a little under 40 acres, includes four parcels plus a 2.3-acre right-of-way area, which will be extended to it. Property owners are Charles Lee, Ryan, and Jamie Halen, Ivan and Laurel Kinnan. Those are the four parcels. And then the right-of-way was owned by Michael Cockerham, Ernie and Gloria Wilkening, BSI Properties, and the Deer Creek Homeowners Association. Background, again, this annexation, the intent of this is for Chris Gardner with Bella Homes. He has interest in acquiring the property, subdivide it, and develop it into, as what Rick said, Iron Bridge. It's a proposed 17-lot single-family residential development. Lot sizes for the dwellings range anywhere from a half acre to upwards to 3 acres. The city's plan is to annex this area to R1 residential district with a planned urban development overlay. And in talking with the staff, the reason for the overlay has to do with the length of the cul-de-sac, the fact that the water system won't be looped, and then they'll be initially will be served with on-site septic systems. So it'll include also two outlets, which will be zoned A1 agricultural district. The minimum lot size, though, for the city's parcels is about a 10,000 square foot lot. Things that are interesting about this request is the existing paving from the current corporate limits north to this development will be paved, which is 550th Avenue. They're going to extend an 8-inch water main to the development, and it'll be stubbed, and that will be at the developer's cost. Just looking at some of the nuances of the R1 district that we thought would be of interest, they have a requirement that any lots that abut the Ballard Creek, which Ballard Creek extends through this development, any lots that abut that creek, the accessory structures have a 50-foot minimum setback from the rear property line, and then they have a requirement that not more than 50% of the shrubs and trees be removed for maintaining the wildlife corridor. This is the area. Again, it's about a little under 40-acre area. It will also include the road right-of-way, which will be extended to it. It's about a quarter mile north of the current corporate limits. Aerial, I think this is like the 2013 aerial. The area that to be annexed is shown in red. Ballard Creek does extend through the central, south central area of the development. The city's corporate limits is in blue, and then just to the south is the golf course. History, Iron Bridge subdivision, and the rezoning request was before the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission. With a 4-1 vote, they did recommend denial on January 4. The item was before the Board of Supervisors January 31st. Both the rezoning request and the subdivision plat, it was tabled to allow all the board members to weigh in on it. And then the following week, the applicant did submit a request to withdraw the rezoning and the plat. That was February 7, 2017. Current information, the City of Huxley did invite the staff from Story County to a consultation meeting. It's a courtesy consultation meeting. It involves all consenting property owners in this request. State law states that there's a requirement that they have a consultation meeting when there's up to 20% of the landowners or 20% of the land area that would be non-consenting property owners. And then we have, in those scenarios, we have 30 days to take action either to approve or deny or to be neutral on the request with a resolution. But this is a totally consenting voluntary annexation.
100% of the property owners that would be coming in are saying they want to come in.
Right. Okay.
Right. So pretty much similar to what you saw and what the Planning and Zoning Commission saw when it was reviewed at the county. Again, it's 17 lots for single-family development. Those lots are going to be on the proposed for the south side of the creek. This is the creek area and floodplain. They are proposing two large lots on the north side of the creek. Again, the zoning for those would be A1 agricultural district. The lots for the single family would be R1. This is the topography. Again, it's a long cul-de-sac off of 550th Avenue. They are showing a detention basin in the western portion, which will be a part of the lots that are proposed. Points to consider in reviewing this request. Again, this is not in the expansion area that's identified in the C2C plan. Expansion areas are typically growth areas, areas that are planned to be annexed by cities. In those areas, it's thought that they would take on the development standards of the cities. Having said that, property owners have the right to submit requests to annex, which is what took place here. We talked about the road being extended and the water being extended. Those things are going to be extended and paid for by the developer. We talked about the 17 single-family lots with two outlots. Again, R1 zoning. They do have a setback requirement for accessory structures that they need to be 50 feet from the rear property line. And they also have a requirement that no more than 50% of shrubs and trees can be removed within that corridor. Again, the item was before the Board of Supervisors February 7 to accept the applicant's request to withdraw. And the Huxley Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval at their April 24 meeting. And this item will be before the City Council tonight at their meeting. Just to give you an idea, this is the issue before you is the annexation. Courtesy on whether or not you take action on the resolution. I know it's not something that's required under state law, but I thought it would be interesting to just share with you the conditions for the subdivision. Again, they're going to be looking at the annexation, the rezoning, and the subdivision. The city's Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval with five items. One is an easement for future trail along the creek, which is consistent with their comp plan. Assessment protest waiver for the Iron Bridge development in the event 550th requires curb and gutter. There's an assessment protest to extend water up to Outlot X along 550th, excuse me. There's an assessment protest waiver for the installation of sanitary sewer, which is dry sewer, should that be extended at some point in the future. And then the last thing is extension of sidewalk from the current corporate limits to this development and then within the development. So this resolution 17-106 was prepared to take no action for or against. I'd like to also add that we've had similar requests. It's pretty common for the City of Ames to invite the county to consultation meetings when it's 100% voluntary. I did some check-in. We've had the last couple, the Crane annexation, the DR Furman, those were both set for no action,
right.
A neutral.
It has been standard practice for the boards of supervisors in Story County for years and years and years to take no action. Now, the previous board got out of that with a couple of projects and took action in support of the annexation, but I'd still say this, our Story County standard practice has been to take no action on a annexation, especially when it's 100%.
Yeah, the,
take no position.
Yeah, the East Industrial...
Right. We did
text amendment. That one was supported by the county, and the resolution was to approve that.
Yep. Okay, questions?
So, walking through the courtesy process of them bringing us in on a consult again.
It wasn't required by state law. It was something that we had a call from their city attorney bringing that to our attention, and it's something that we did agree that it wasn't required by state law, but we stated that there was interest in this issue, and we're always interested to talk to communities about what they're proposing to do. And so they did invite us to attend. Darren and I attended. And since we attended, we put together a memo and a resolution.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, Jerry, did this change and all of a sudden part of this area not be environmentally sensitive anymore?
Well, this is a situation that they wanted to rezone, they wanted to develop in the county.
I know they do.
The process that we went through,
our
position was that it
should
not be supported. Now it's out of the county's hands as far as the you know, the action that's involved. It's really up to the city and their planning and their policies. And you know, it did go before their Planning and Zoning Commission, and it was supported with the conditions, which again, there's three things. One is the annexation, the rezoning, and then the actual plat. Mm-hmm. And with that plat, the city's P&Z would like to support it with those conditions. But ultimately, that's up to the city council to weigh in on.
Well, then let's go to the resolution. I wish we could oppose this. I obviously wasn't there to vote that day. I listened to everything. I'm very disappointed that someone wanting to build a house ends up being in an environmentally sensitive area, and that takes precedence over, I think, some other issues of moral and what we're going to do in the future. But we have a resolution in front of us. And it says either we're not going to take any position for or against it, and we're not legally able, unfortunately, to take any position against it. So I'll move the resolution for the sake of us getting to a vote.
Okay. We got a vote and a second for Resolution 170106. Further discussion?
None.
Okay. Olson?
No.
Chi?
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Resolution 17-106 is adopted.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Hey, we're page six. We're making progress. Six and seven, I should say, for those of you keeping score at home. Discussion and consideration of Resolution 17-103, Orchard View Minor Subdivision Plat.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, how are you guys?
First presentation as a full-time Story County employee?
Yes.
Outstanding.
That's right. Well, to you guys, I suppose. Yes. So, we're going to be talking about the minor subdivision plat request for the Orchard View subdivision. It's located in Section 31 of Nevada Township. The applicant is Larry Stevens of H.R. Green on behalf of the City of Nevada. The property owners are Willie and Donna C. And the purpose of this reconfiguration is to reconfigure five existing parcels to create three platted lots, one of which is lot one, and two of which are outlots A and B. And so outlots aren't development lots. That's the difference there. A wastewater treatment plant for the City of Nevada is proposed to be located on lot one. So the City of Nevada will purchase lot one from the current owner. The current owner will maintain ownership of those outlots, however. So again, the nature of the request, the City of Nevada's existing wastewater treatment plant is required to upgrade its facilities in order to meet more stringent effluent limitations under its NPDES permit with the Iowa DNR. According to the applicant, the site of the existing plant does not meet the separation distance required from residences by the DNR, so they need a new site. The subdivision plat being requested with lot one will meet this separation requirement and other siting requirements that they looked into, one of which would be a willing seller being downstream of the City of Nevada to allow the gravity system to work, those kinds of factors. The subdivision is being requested before a conditional use permit application. They do need a conditional use permit for this wastewater treatment plant in an A1 agricultural zoning district. They will apply for that later. They want to do the subdivision now due to the interest in the property owner of selling right now. The construction timeline is in the next few years, maybe 5 to 6, so the conditional use permit could come at a much later time. At the May 3rd, 2017 Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, they did recommend approval of this request. So here is the current configuration on the left. Again, 5 parcels. And the proposed division you can see is, here's lot 1. It's 122.62 net acres. The wastewater treatment plant, again, will be located roughly around the center of it. And then you have outlot A over here and outlot B. Here's the zoning and C2C future land use maps. I want to point out on the zoning, there are 2 properties to the east that are zoned R1 residential, and one of the subject properties is actually split zoned A1 agricultural and R1 residential. I know it's hard to see. There was a map in your packet too. But this split zone area will be in one of the outlots. Just a little portion would be in lot 1. So that outlot will really encompass most of that split zoned area and take that out of development by being an outlot. There are also 5 adjacent parcels with single family dwellings, although again the separation distance of 1,000 feet is met. Here's those parcels up here. You can see on the CTC future land use map a little bit better. This is Indian Creek that runs through the properties, and so there is floodplain on these properties and natural resource areas that roughly corresponds with that floodplain area. The outlots are mainly composed of treat areas and the natural resource area, although there is some on lot 1 as well, including floodplain. They will need to do a base flood elevation study with that conditional use permit when they do apply for that to determine exactly where that is. So this is the plat that they've submitted. I wanted to point out here, I know this is a big plat and hard to see, but this area they have included the floodplain and the natural resource area on the plat. So you can kind of see it on the plat map. Again, here's the vicinity and C2C future land use map. So it's about 2.5 miles south of the city of Nevada, downstream from the existing wastewater treatment plant. You can see, here's the subject property. There's a lot of future land use R1 residential transitional here. And this is the Nevada, this is the country club that's zoned commercial, light industrial, and then along here you've got natural resource areas, again, corresponding with the Indian Creek floodplain. So here's some photos of the site. This is looking south from 270th Street onto Indian Creek. This is looking south from 270th onto proposed Outlot A. This is looking through a property that's not part of the division onto Lot 1. This is looking southeast from 270th onto Lot 1, and again, Lot 1 south from 270th, so agricultural use now. And that agricultural use will remain until it's developed. So applicable regulations for a minor subdivision plat, there's just 4 main ones that I wanted to bring up. They need all of these. A subdivision that's proposed to be a minor subdivision can contain no more than 4 development lots. So you know there's 1 proposed in this case. All development lots within the subdivision are existing on a fronted existing public street. That's 270th. Subdivision includes no land set apart for streets or other public uses. And no agricultural or minor subdivisions have been approved for the tracts being divided after December 31st, 2003. And that's not the case either. So we're good with applicable regulations. They also, their plat complies with the other submittal requirements outlined in the land development regulations. These are just a few applicable comments from our interagency review team. We just noted that, again, a conditional use permit is required before construction of the wastewater treatment plant. We also wanted a statement on if they would connect to a septic system or would just connect into the actual wastewater treatment plant when it was constructed. And they said they will just connect to the wastewater treatment facility to be properly treated. The Story County engineer wanted to know how much traffic would be generated on these gravel roads. They said a max of 10 cars a day with employees, and there will be occasional truck deliveries. Story County floodplain manager would like to see all of the floodplains located in the outlots with deed restrictions, but we cannot require this at this time with our current code. And again, they will need to do an applicable flood insurance study prior to a conditional use of permit approval. We sent notification letters, and at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, we received comments for the record from several members of the public. Ray Ringenberg farms the property north of the site and was concerned that the sewer main would go through properties, and those properties had not been notified. Dean Henry farms south of the site downstream and was concerned about maintaining his water quality permit for his food growing operation with this just upstream of him. Analysis and some points to consider in evaluating the proposed Orchard View minor subdivision. Again, the subdivision meets all requirements for a minor subdivision plat. The subject property is located in the agricultural, conservation, and natural resource areas of the C2C's future land use map. Just a few notes on that. The property is in high agricultural value. And the floodplain and natural resource areas will be put in outlots, but there is still some in that lot one where the wastewater treatment plant would be located. But again, this wastewater treatment plant is allowing them to meet more stringent effluent limitations according to the applicant. And maybe in the future, those R1 areas could even connect in so they wouldn't need to use septic anymore. Analysis continued. There are 5 adjacent properties with single-family dwellings, but they do meet that 1,000-foot separation distance. And finally, again, a conditional use permit is still required for this. So the recommendation from the Planning and Zoning Commission at the May 3rd meeting was for approval. And that would be alternative one. Do you guys have any questions?
Questions? Comments?
I understand that this city had some issues as far as acquiring the property because you probably didn't have a plan B. You were just happy it's a land sale available to you.
We have a city manager from New Haven here. Would you like to address us?
Could you come on up?
Yeah.
We have the applicant as well,
Larry.
Oh,
the
engineer.
I'm
Matt. Matt, come over so that we pick you up on the audio. Everything I hear, you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you.
So congratulations on that.
Matt Martison, City of Nevada, City Administrator. This isn't ideally the plan that we wanted to go to, but we're given this from the DNR, so we really don't have a lot of choices. The main concept here is we have a willing seller, and as nobody likes to hear the word eminent domain, but that really would have been our only option had we not gotten a willing seller. So we will have some work ahead of us to get that connection down there with some easements, but I think there's some benefit to that as far as their ability to potentially hook on to us. So from the standpoint of, as I look at it from a financial standpoint, the ability to get a willing seller probably just saved this project millions of dollars in the long run. And hopefully with that being said, we can continue to keep our rates, sewer rates, within check and within reason for the city. So it's a huge benefit from us financially. It's a little bit further south than ideally we would like to have gone, but the reality of it is, you know, we're playing what we have available. So that's kind of, from our standpoint, we believe it will work well. Our engineers have said it will work. The one drawback is it's very new in the plan. We don't really know exactly what kind of a system we'll have to have and that kind of thing. So we're just trying to prepare ourselves for this project as it comes to us from the DNR.
Perfect. Thanks, Matt. Questions for Matt?
Might be a little bit early in the process, but have you had any discussions in regards to, as you see growth in the area, coming to the area and properties already there, on the tying in of the use of this facility, is that something that you guys have contemplated or discussed?
Yeah, we've had some of those discussions because we're working with a potential subdivision just south on 11th Street. And where that is currently, there is a possibility that we could potentially, fast-track that service and take some pressure and relief off some others to the north. So it is going to be considered. As I look at it, the potential development on 11th Street has some potential to really benefit from this being from that trunk line going down there.
Okay, good.
I look at the map. I see a natural resource area. I hear concerns, especially I identify with the berry patch owner thinking, wow, you know, what would happen here? I don't know a lot about wastewater treatment facilities, but wastewater implies to me it's the stuff that we're flushing, not the stuff we're coming out of the sink, all right? So I can hear and concerns about what would happen if this plant would fail or have some kind of breach. Can you talk to me about how that happens, what would happen, the design that would hopefully stop that?
There's a lot of safety factors that will be implemented on a new plant, on a new facility, and the level of treatment and the level of disinfection that will be required now by the DNR is a lot more stringent than what we currently do. So the output should be a lot cleaner than what we currently have. With any wastewater facility, there's always that potential of some type of failure, but there's certain backups and mechanisms that prevent that from actually going out. So there's ways that we can incorporate those safeguards in the planning of the plant. So I don't really know that is a huge issue because it's already been incorporated into the plan of the new facility. Quite frankly, the water quality coming out of the new one will be lower than what's already coming out of the existing plant. Therefore, the stream would be cleaner with the new facility than it would at its current levels.
What about going in? I mean, you know, the concerns about the easement and the pipes having to run through private property and leaks from the pipes getting it down in.
There is some concern on my behalf of the city about getting all those easements and everything lined up. I think really what we're looking for is to make sure that this is the spot that we will be putting that. We'll work through those easements. As far as the main trunk line coming through, I don't see any issues with anything there because it won't be like your current sewer right now is usually under a street or traffic where it's getting a workload on it. But this one really won't have that workload because it really will be pretty much in an agricultural property. So I don't anticipate that getting the kind of stress that we do of under the streets. So I think long-term use, that would be a lot better for the longevity of the main line, if you will.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
None.
No.
Okay. Anything to add?
I guess just to your first question, Morris, I forgot to mention in the presentation that the current plant does discharge into Indian Creek currently. Yeah. Fine.
Okay.
Understand.
North.
So. Thank you.
North.
Come across 30 and 6th Street is where it's located currently.
Yep. Okay, thank you. That was helpful to put everything in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like you say, this isn't something the city of Nevada is choosing to do.
No,
this is something
that
they're being told to do.
No, we're being directed to do this from the Iowa DNR.
And
I'd rather build
be
houses.
Somewhere. And like you say, willing seller is a huge.
I got it.
Okay.
I would move, if there are no other questions, I would move. Consideration of resolution 1703, the Orchard View minor subdivision with alternative number one.
I would like to say, is this a public meeting, Eric?
Yeah, let's finish making the motion and then I'll have you up. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll second for further discussion.
We have a motion and a second, and Joe has indicated that he'd like to speak to us, and we'll take anybody else too, but we'll start with you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Normally I just invited up to talk automatically, so.
Okay. Good morning, Joe Quaker. Today acting on my own. I live at 62835 270th Street. So I'll be right across the street from this place. Mm-hmm. And I acknowledge the fact that we need a new waste treatment facility big time. You know, I use the bathrooms here in the courthouse, so it all works out downhill. I just would like to discuss a couple of my concerns, and I think the engineer has it up there about traffic on that road. Now, I don't know if you've been on that road. The UPS man might have, or the FedEx guy might have been down there a few times, but it's a crazy road. And I know, you know, the proposed plant's going to be up on top of the hill, but I wasn't sure about where the the lots may go down on the floodplain by the bridge, if there was any housing in that area, to further congest traffic up and down the hill. You know, and the other thing would be making sure that if this is annexed and the city does get some of this, that they're good neighbors. I've had some issues in the past, quite frankly, with some of their the tanker trucks that would haul the liquid waste out of Nevada, and then it would be put on the field south legally and all that, you know, how that works. But so I'll, you know, I'll be, that's a concern with just being a good neighbor, the city of Nevada, and property taxes, things like that, that we won't go into. But I just thought I'd make those comments. Traffic and just some other questions that I can get answered later.
Absolutely. But we're not talking about annexation.
Okay.
Right?
It's a subdivision.
Yeah, but not going into the city of Nevada. They're going to remain in the county. It's going to be a property that's owned by the city of Nevada, but it won't be in the city of Nevada.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean annexation. I meant, what's the word?
Subdivision.
Yep. So it's already a subdivision, right? You said five lots now.
Well, they were done through plats of survey, so they're unplatted, but okay. And some are quarter-quarters original.
But fewer number of lots is what we're talking about coming out with than we have right now. As far as good neighbor, we'll let Matt speak to that and traffic count. Those are the two things, Joe, that I heard out of that.
That's it.
Okay. So I saw in traffic count estimation of 10 additional vehicles a day, so occasional truck traffic coming through. Just talk to us about what is normal for a facility like this, city of Nevada size.
That's about normal for what we currently have, and a lot of that truck traffic is really just a pickup truck kind of a traffic in and out, mainly to and from work, returning to and from our breaks. You'll see those kind of trucks. From a standpoint of like larger trucks, that's not an average everyday occurrence. So it's more of just your small four wheeled vehicles that'll be going in and out of that facility on a daily basis. Probably the biggest impact on that road will be during the construction of it. Of course, you're going to have a lot of traffic when it gets constructed. So, as far as being a good neighbor, we'll do our part to make sure that, it's maintained, and we do everything according to regulations to make sure we're operating the plan and also taking care of our property. I think we take care of our property very well. We have well fields that aren't in the city, but we take care of those on a regular basis and mow them. So the quality of care on that property, I don't see an issue from the city standpoint to make sure that we're taking care of it as it should be taken care of, even though it's not within our corporate city limits.
True. Thanks. Anybody else who would like to speak to this? Marty, anything additional you want to speak to?
No, it's one of those roads that I'm surprised that they had to go that far south, and I understand your angst about going that way. It's not ideal, but it's where it's at, and I guess we have to take the choices you have before you. So the road is sometimes an uneven thing, and I guess this would be a good exhibit of that.
Not soft form road, by the way. Nevada's being told that this is going to happen. So
yeah.
If there's nothing further, we have a motion and a second on the table. Anything else?
Nope.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes.
Thank you.
So now we'll see when development actually starts to come. We'll see that.
Conditional use permit.
But that's how many years away do you expect?
I would say five.
5 years away. Okay.
That'll be Planning and Zoning Commission and Board of Adjustment.
Perfect.
They'll come to the board.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Amelia.
Good job, Amelia.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, Matt.
That's all right. No big deal.
Discussion and direction regarding financing of Phase 2 of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. Leanne and Mike Cox. And I see that we have Steve Carter here as well. Anytime we talk about research park issues.
Sure, pinned out.
I don't want you guys to be offended.
You know, we've got a meeting in here in an hour.
we're going to talk about that after this one.
So really, today's meeting is really to begin the dialogue regarding how Story County finances that Phase 2 of the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. While Mike brings up the presentation, I'm going to just give some brief background. A year or so ago, the Board of Supervisors at that time made the decision to use tax increment financing funds to finance the first phase of the project. That really did follow upon their expressed commitment earlier in February, and thank you, Loris, for pointing out I was a year ahead of myself. I was being visionary a year ago.
Good.
With noting the incorrect year. Really, that was an error on my part in the memo prepared for today. I'm going to really just keep my comments brief and pass over to Mike to present and update where we are and where we're going on phase one and discuss cost estimates for phase two. Direction today we seek is kind of twofold, and it builds on the first decision you make today or at a future date. What funding mechanisms does Story County want to use for financing with phase two? And then if we go back and pattern from last year and use the TIF funding, what process and schedule for that? And I'm selfishly asking that as I want to be able to build that schedule. After Mike's done, we'll revisit those two questions.
This is a good time of year to start this conversation, but it is the beginning of this conversation. Mike.
Yeah, good. Well, thank you. And thanks, Leanne, for moving this project along. I think, and I'm going to be brief in the interest of everyone's time, and I think also that everyone's familiar with the Research Park project and now the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. We've had discussions about it numerous occasions, kind of where we are at the moment. We do have a master plan approved. We have engaged a engineering firm which did the master plan, and we have phase one funding secured. We are moving forward with design of phase one. Phase one includes stream bank stabilization. Work has begun with that. We have not started a contract, however, with the main construction contract. We anticipate bringing a project forward for bid very soon. So final plans, we're at 95% design right now. Expect to be at 100% very soon, and then we'll bring that project forward to the board for authorization to seek bids for it. So that's phase one. Just in general, I think you're all well aware, so I won't belabor this point as well, but you know, the learning corridor is, you know, we seized an opportunity to do a lot of firsts with this project. One is being innovative in every aspect of the project, and two is really seeking those partnerships and developing this as something that people can point at, you know, down the road and say, hey, you know, this was done right for the community, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to illustrate how resource conservation, how quality of life improvements, healthy lifestyle encouragement, those kinds of things can all be hand in hand with economic development and business generation, job generation for the community. So that's what we're looking at. And I'll get into some specifics right now as far as the funding goes. Here's a summary on funding for phase one. You see on the right hand column is an expense summary. That's a cost opinion. We right now have a cost opinion for the construction contract. You'll see there of $961,000. We have some items that will be part of that project that we'll need to take care of. That's the owner provided there. Then you'll see the engineering administration amount, trail component. So wrap up, you get a total expense line of $1.64. Then if you move over to the left, you've got the revenue summary. So we have 1.5 in TIF available. We have secured a couple of grants and some contribution from some pledged contribution from the Rotary Club in Ames, and then some financial contribution from DOT. So the bottom line on that revenue side is 1.7. And bottom line on the expense side is 164, so it leaves us good right now at a conceptual cost opinion. Again, we haven't got bids yet, but based on our on some concept numbers, it leaves us to the good here with phase one.
And that's got a pretty healthy contingency in it at this point as well.
Yeah, if you see the note there, you know, that's 12%. So that contingency is related. That's 12% of
that's
the
nine.
High,
but then again, that's a good thing because you just have the money left over. Sorry to interrupt, but I'm just on the contingency side. It is a little high.
Yeah, that's a lot. So it's for the most part represented in the construction figure there, the $961,000. And there is some representation for that as well in the engineering and the administration line. As we go to award a contract, what you'll hear me say is probably I'll recommend a 10% contingency rather than 12%. But still moving forward in design, typically what we see is in contingency, the earlier in design you are, the higher contingency, the more you get that design fine-tuned, then the narrower the contingency gets. So, but yes, there's still a healthy contingency in the project. Phase two. Phase two would include in-park development, which i.e. is the trails, the interpretive components, kind of what we call the program components, habitat restoration, infrastructure, lighting, I mean, that kind of thing. It's developing the turnkey park on that property. And so, you know, you'll see on the revenue side, that's what we're discussing today. A portion thereof on the expense side, this is just the cost opinion. We end up with 1.4, so just south of 1.5 million on this. And I'll note in relation to the contingency discussion, this is a 15% contingency at this stage rather than the 12%. And we'd see the same reduction in contingency as we move forward with design. We anticipate, just to give you a kind of a rough idea on timing, we do anticipate the phase one work to have a contract before the board the first part of August, the latter part of July. And then we expect to have a phase two, if you will, contract for design. I'm going to say, short, about that same time, probably, maybe following on that a little bit, but the work for phase two will be spring work. So it'll be spring of 18.
Mike, I have a question just about, again, bringing those contracts forward. First of all, the engineering contract and architectural, those have all been signed throughout the project. We can't go back and amend those any when it comes to, like, them charging 10%. For reimbursables?
Yeah, that's already been.
That's okay.
That's already been. So typically, what we do is, anytime we look at, as we move a project forward, then we contract for what we have the funding for, and then as we move a project forward through phases, acquire more funding, then we do addendums to that contract and add to it for further design services.
I would like us as the board, as those addendums come forward, or the construction contracts come forward, engineering, whatever, that we consider not allowing that 10% surcharge on top of reimbursables. We're starting to look at some big numbers here. Thank you.
Moving forward, then the phase three on this project would be that trail connector from the park out to R38. And this would be right now we're probably looking at a fall of 18 project on this, maybe spring of 19 on this work. We have a cost opinion of 1.35. And again, that's a 15% contingency in that construction contract. And one thing I'll say with, in relation to the design and engineering fees, the construction, observation, administration fees, all of those are in that $90,000 line on this phase three. We do have some choices to bring that number down. Essentially, it's us taking on more work and, you know, freeing up the, not expecting as much from the design firm or from our project management there. So that's always one option, is to really look at the scope. They've anticipated the same level of scope for their services in these projects for construction, observation, and administration, as we did with Dakin's Lake.
It's a matter, to me, it's a matter of principle and using the taxpayers' money wisely. When they charge 10% for reimbursables like paper and expense mileage, we're already paying that fee. Mm-hmm. That's why I've asked.
Sure. And just so we understand the process, so any addendum to the contract, any new contract,
right,
will flow through the Conservation Board with a recommendation coming to this body, and we can discuss any piece of that we want when it comes to us.
Okay. I'd like to go back one slide. If I see that and I remember what you said, 1.3, I definitely need new glasses.
Yeah, Leanne's coming around with some handouts for you. Okay. Yeah, 1.357.
Okay, so given 1 and 2 added up to $3 billion, so this would be revenue somewhere anticipating phase 3, $1 million from us, and then the overs would come, the over amounts would come from whatever you're going to do from other donors or whatever.
Yeah, so if you look at the bottom line on this, and I apologize, I didn't realize that was going to be that hard to see up there, but the bottom line you see on the front page of that handout that Leanne just gave you,
mm-hmm,
the bottom line of 4.46 for all three.
So there's $460,000, of course, if these numbers hold true, there's $460,000 that has to be identified somewhere else.
And if the contingencies aren't as much as anticipated,
then
that'll
get closer.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
And so, but I do want to, and I appreciate that, I want to go back to this slide here. This is phase one work. Our intention with this project is to really leverage as much as we can.
Right.
Of the money that's appropriated from the county, I'd like to spend as little of that as possible, as you are well aware, and I think this slide shows a little bit of that. But our intention would be to use that funding and leverage some outside funding sources. Again, this is a good project. This is a unique project for the state.
The first of its kind in the Midwest, and that should open the door to a lot of smaller grant opportunities if we're willing to chase them. I'd like us to be willing to chase them.
Yep, it does. And so, I'm intending to bring several grant applications forward for these subsequent phases, with the idea of minimizing that local funding.
So we would really like, I believe, and Mike, you tell me if I'm saying something here that you disagree with, but we would really like ultimately for the county to have to invest less than $4 million. We just put the upper cap that the maximum the county is going to invest is $4 million, and if the project goes beyond that, there has to be external funding sources identified to get that done. This board has the ability to say, oh no, we want to fund more than that if we so choose. I would struggle with that. So is that fair
yeah,
way to say?
Absolutely. And you see in this phase one, it was roughly $200,000 that was brought to the table and leveraged. And I expect larger asks with subsequent phases, particularly with the state and some federal money as well. The research park has been helping as well. I know Steve's here today, but has been keeping eyes out for available funding sources and helping with that. So we for sure appreciate that effort and cognizance on the part of the research park.
Let's just say the research park has been a phenomenal partner to this point, really helping to find solutions every time we ran into a kind of a sticky point.
Absolutely. So I don't know if it'd be appropriate. Steve has any comments if he would like to come.
I'm sure we'll hear from Steve, but let's hear from him once the presentation is done, and then when there's questions, and he can help.
Question slide.
So that's I need a slide to prompt. Oops, we don't need to go that far. Okay,
So what we're looking for today is direction on how to move forward. So that would be source or sources of funding that we want to consider for this, what I'm seeing as a $1.5 million ask in phase two, which falls with what we had penciled out early. So where does that 1.5 come from? For phase one, it came from TIF dollars. I would clearly like us to consider that for phase two, but there's other possibilities of where that funding could come from. And then once we determine what areas of funding we want to talk about, then we can talk about timeline for having that discussion. Is it a standalone discussion, or are we going to incorporate it with other items that we work on? I would prefer it, this is a large enough project, I'd prefer it to be a standalone discussion. And so today is really intended as just the intro to this, with us setting the calendar for how we're going to talk about this and what kind of things we're going to talk about. So, Marty, Loris, open to you.
I would have to say that it was my understanding that as TIF came out of the ground in 2011, that this would be a project, not necessarily to this magnitude, but along these lines, that was why you chose to implement that process. Brought the community in, the community had comfort with it. We've expanded just in my short time here on the board. You took in, what, 7 windmills here just last summer. The pool, the pod is growing. On an appropriations basis, I would think that TIF would be where I have comfort in going. It does not encumber the general fund, and I would be loath to move in that direction.
Okay. Loris.
I just struggle over the use of TIF, that when there is a return back on it immediate, or tied to taxes. But I do think that the first phase of this ended up working out with the funding pretty well using TIF. I'm encouraged by the $800,000 payment that we just approved to pay off some of our bonds last week. So, and since it looks like this is going to be one lump sum, when you come with the ask, it's going to be August, maybe July. I heard that for the summer sometime, yeah. So,
for the
phase two.
Phase two, I mean, I think if it is TIF, that Leanne can talk about that timeline.
Right.
Okay.
And how that's appropriated. We won't need the phase two construction money until we approve a contract, which would be next spring.
All right, next spring.
Right, but if it's TIF, it's a December 1st deadline that the auditor, that we certify to the auditor, or the auditor certifies? Okay, so Board of Supervisors certifies to the auditor any new TIF debt that we're going to assume, and that's a December 1st deadline if, in fact, that's our funding mechanism. We don't have any money in the FY18 budget for this.
And I do not anticipate, as we've been discussing, just the early phrases of any kind of housing program that would be brought to you that would be a coordinated, I don't anticipate being able to go until FY19. It's
sure.
going to take
well, and I don't. So I don't view those in competition.
Okay,
right?
I don't
view what we're talking about here with Tedesco in competition with anything else we might do. That what I see, Loris, is that could impact any other conversations, could impact what kind of dollar availability we have for the kind of the micro grants that we do with our smaller towns.
Right. Okay.
That's more where I see that.
Okay. So that given, this conversation is, let's look at TIF.
Okay. And so then the question for you guys is, so last year we ran that $1.5 million TIF request for Tedesco as a standalone conversation. It was on its own. It was not part of the request that cities made. I'm suggesting to you guys that I'd like to do exactly the same thing with this, because I think this warrants its own conversation rather than getting in where we have the presentations from the 6 towns who want to utilize some kind of TIF.
Oh,
we could run it either calendar. Do you have a preference, Leanne?
I do prefer running them individual.
Yeah.
Like as we did last year, it differentiates between the two. Mm-hmm. And it honestly, on my end, it's six of one, half dozen the other. I still have to do the same legal notice requirements and dot the I's, cross the T's, amend the plan, and bring that to you. But it does help focus the mailings and the outreach we do for the taxing entities and everything else if we run them separately.
Okay.
All right. So, I mean, in essence, I would do the phase two here relatively soon over the remainder of the spring and the summer. And then once August hits, we'll start doing the micro grants for the community.
So we would get done with, as you're laying it out, we would get done with Tedesco consideration by the end of summer. We would do what we normally do with urban renewal stuff in the fall. Everything ready for a December 1st certification.
So you'll have two, and we did this last year, you amended the plan twice, two separate resolutions. But it really does allow each basically to stand on its own.
Okay. Anybody have heartburn with us following that same process?
No.
Okay.
Just give me the timeline on the bid letting, or the bond letting. With that in mind.
If I were to bring... say I was to come back next week with the schedule. Last year we started in April and we were letting the bond, we're getting the quotes in July, I think, June and July. I think July was the final action.
Right, and then we push off as far as possible receiving the dollars since we didn't need them right at that point. But we got such a favorable rate we felt like we had to go ahead and take them. But I want to say we had 60 days from the quote to take.
I think we'd be looking at the financing piece, the bond, probably late July, early August, even maybe even into September.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be some overlap, but...
And I help me please understand why we would have to do it so early if we're not even going to bid the contracts until spring.
Because you can't certify debt that you don't have.
Yeah.
Got it.
That December 1st
Thank
deadline
you.
Is what triggers everything else.
But that's lose the game of the answer that's stuck
yep.
in my mind. Thank
yep.
you.
Mm-hmm. We are losing the window of the cheapest money we can get, too. Because as you see the Fed moving, the
right.
bond rates will follow.
Well, so I think we're going to want some full analysis to see when the right time to hit this, because we have a little flexibility of when we actually go out to bond on this thing. And if we see a window, I mean, the whole point is to get done what we have to get done based on calendar, right? But do it in the cheapest way possible. And so just doing some analysis on that, and you know, Renee Tweed, our treasurer, has a good relationship with the local bankers, and we'll see what we can get back. And we'd always prefer to stay local, just many times we get better quotes from Olay.
Right.
Yeah, because you have the cost of construction and the cost of the money for the construction.
Absolutely.
There are components that go for the overall.
Okay, so do we need to take formal action, or do you guys have enough direction now to move forward? Discussion and direction, I think we got there. Are you clear? So, and I'll just restate it as I heard it. Going down, exploring TIF for phase two, and Leanne, you're going to come back to us in as timely a fashion possible with the schedule to consider this on its own.
And Mike, I'd love to get that PowerPoint.
If
you
can
email it to me.
You bet.
You'll actually be able to see it when you get it on your computer.
Closest.
Yeah.
All right.
Excuse me.
Leanne, these next two items, can we hold them for a future week?
No. The we're on a time frame with the floodplain.
So can we hold CPAP for another
yes.
week? Because we need to clear this room and let facilities rearrange it.
I would love to say we could.
So let's move through what we got to do here. So we are to update on the draft flood hazard products from FEMA and Iowa DNR. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
I have a presentation I'm going to walk through. I will be rapid as I go through, but stop with any questions, and if I get technical, I'm trying to avoid that. Just some quick background. Following the 2008 flooding that happened statewide, 85 counties were declared federal disaster areas. What that did is that opened up a substantial pool of funding from HUD, actually, Housing Urban Development Department, to the state of Iowa. With that came substantial funding to create the Iowa Flood Center, which is a wonderful resource for floodplain mapping statewide. For all those 85 counties declared disaster areas, part of the contingency or requirement to go along with that funding was that we had new maps. Our maps, new maps were adopted. The DFIRM is a digital flood insurance rate map. In 2008, our accuracy at best is questionable. They basically took paper copies and scanned them in and then did some rubber sheeting, and I'm going to show you how this will, the product that we have is going to be much more improved. Following the 2008 adoption, we had a number of map amendments brought forth by private entities, more so in the first 18 months than we'd had since 1983 to 2008. So that explains or describes the caliber of the maps. With the creation of the Iowa Flood Center, as I said, it came from funding from HUD. It also involved the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The state then embarked on a remapping effort, working hand-in-hand with FEMA, Federal Insurance Management Authority, agency, sorry. They do govern the National Flood Insurance Program. This map just shows the gradation of the counties and the time frame with which they are mapped. We are in the blue grade, and we're nearing the end of it. Actually, we now have draft products, and for me being the planning geek and mapping geek, I'm really excited about it, actually. There was a draft flood hazard products review meeting hosted by the DNR and FEMA on May 10th. I unfortunately could not attend, and we had some county staff try to attend the webinar, too, but they had some glitches with that. The information was previously put out to floodplain managers, though, on a webinar that I did attend that. It just basically outlined the process that we had to follow as a county participating in the National Flood Insurance Program. Chairman Sanders received a letter dated May 10th that outlined, said, you now have draft flood hazard products. This is why this meeting today is so important, because that letter dictated a 30-day time frame that we have to appeal the methodology that's being used in these maps. Which, when we look back to 2008, we did that, and they weren't so willing. They, being FEMA and the contractor, weren't willing to listen to our appeal. This time they are. Okay. So we want to make sure we get the questions on methodology back out. So I'm proposing we use the interagency review team model for discussing modeling and subsequent map review. I'll reach out to Darren and all. And over the coming several months, you'll see me here several times talking about the new maps. There'll be a public outreach component. There's a process FEMA outlines that we have to follow. Ultimately, you as the elected officials will be required to adopt the new maps, whether we like them or not, in fact, for regulatory purposes, in order to remain in good standing with the National Flood Insurance Program, a fantastic carrot that they offer. So I handed out some directions for looking at the new maps. That's what this sheet is. This is all hosted through the Iowa Flood Center. The new maps really are incredible in detail. These are just snapshots of what you can see, and this is all, again, detailed in what you have. It takes you down to the county level, and then it's based on Google Earth, too, so you can see most recent aerial photography in addition to what we have in-house through our GIS, Geographic Information System. So I said the accuracy of our current maps that we use for regulatory purposes is questionable at best. If you look at the image on the left and compare it to the image on the right, that is, you're looking at the same piece of property. The image on the left is the USGS 30-meter contours. So 30 meters is pretty large. We're looking at submeter contours on the right. The detail is exceptional. Our current maps are based on the 30-meter contours. The new maps will be based on the LIDAR, which is the aerial imagery, or the light image detection, and something that the DNR has done. So our 1% annual chance and 2.2% annual chance, the commonly 100-500-year flood accuracies, will be greatly improved. The methodology is outlined online. Does standard H and H in the hydraulics and hydrology. I'm aware of that. I can study it. I understand it, but I'll have Darren validate it and make sure it's a proper methodology for Story County. And they go, the four steps go through iteration from doing the hydrography to hydrology to ultimately having the mapping. One great benefit is we'll have new firm panels. So the floodplain map actually still comes in a paper copy too. And each of these squares is a paper copy of the map we get. It's called the panel. Right now, this is what is proposed. We have now 99 different panels. Every color you see up there is a different panel. I mean, even two yellows are individual. So we have 99 different panels to manage, which is actually very cumbersome. So I'm happy to see the change in that. All the streams were scoped. If they were a detailed study, they were remapped and looked at the elevation data to verify whether or not it was accurate or not. In some cases, we had information that was detailed since 1983 that had no level of accuracy. So a great benefit from that. We have flood inundation mapping, and this is all available online too. So we have some predictors of where, like in South Skunk, for example, where the highest levels may or may not be encountered. Okay, just to look at where we are right now. So this is the property. You see, can everyone see the yellow rectangle up there?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This is our current floodplain map. This is an area's hatch. So FEMA, when they mapped Story County, we know what the base flood elevation is, so that 100-year flood elevation, because it's hatched. That's what I know from a regulatory standpoint. When the new maps came out, this house was then mapped in the floodplain. They went to refinance their house. So again, this was 2008 after the bubble burst. Went to refinance the house, and they were told they had to have flood insurance. I don't remember the particulars on this property, but they were probably quoted $4,000 to $6,000 for that flood insurance. They went through the process to get a letter of map amendment, and that's how I know that through the yellow color on the map. I've done the GIS analysis so that I can easily tell when these have occurred and when they've not. What that basically does, FEMA said, you've done the study. We're actually excluding you now from the floodplain. But if they ever do any additions to that house, they still need to meet the regulations. So it's that's what it's currently like. So the orange lines up there and the numbers, that's the LIDAR. So those are the contour lines that Iowa Flood Center has used as a methodology and their base for developing new maps. Just south of the house, you can kind of see 932, 934. The contours go south of the house. And then I put the new maps on. So that pink and blue, you see where they correlate to those contours. Much more accurate. And it will positively affect many, many homeowners. I have not delved into the analysis on that. That's a step yet to come, in months yet to come. So again, just a reiteration of how that map will change without the contours on. Another example is over here south of Flexicoil and Better Equipment. The map on the left, all that blue is Zone A, so we don't have any detailed information. But anything that comes in there, I have to require a floodplain permit, and they have to have a study done on their dime to determine what the elevation data is. Map on the right, not based on that 30-meter contours, again, based on really great degree of accuracy in the LIDAR, tightens in considerably and is very, from a regulatory standpoint, a lot easier to execute and work with property owners. So a great benefit to having this project. There's another issue with, you see the amount of blue taken out there mm-hmm. with the overlay. Next steps, again, I already mentioned the internal staff review. By June 8th, I will forward comments to the DNR. I'd welcome any of you to sit in through that meeting if you'd like to delve deep into the weeds of modeling. We'll be looking at the comparison of the different products, too. I just gave a snapshot of some of what I'll be doing, going panel by panel using GIS. Next step is compiling the properties affected either negatively or positively, and whether they're removed, added, some maybe revised, and going through a process and notifying those new structures. With links to seeing the new maps, we'll probably hold some workshops here. They'll be later this summer that we'll be doing at that stage. Once this 30-day window closes and we receive official notice, it'll come to you, Rick, and CC me, that you need to start the official adoption procedures. And at that point, you start the public outreach components, and then we go through appeal periods as well.
So you need direction from us to pull together the interagency review?
No. I just need to, no. I'm doing that. That's part of my administrative role as full-time manager. I just, it's under other reports, you need to publicly acknowledge that we're in this 30-day time frame.
Okay. So I'll take a motion to publicly acknowledge that we're in this 30-day time frame.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Anything else we need to do, Leanne? Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a good thing
coming to your eighth meeting. Modeling just doesn't rise to that level.
I'm sorry, what?
He's not coming to your meeting.
He just told you it didn't rise to his interest at all.
We're going to hold the CPAP report card for a future future meeting.
It's true.
No departmental reports, public forum number two, opportunity for members of the public to comment on items. I'm going to stop there since there are no members of the public. Liaison assignments. I think it's Morris's turn to start.
And you know what? I'm just going to say I had a transportation filled week, and we'll have one this week, and I'll let it go at that.
Perfect.
Okay.
Marty.
I pass.
Good trip to D.C. Met with our entire delegation, with the exception of our entire delegation and LOPSEC. Did not meet with Blum. Had a nice meeting on White House grounds, which was the first time that I've been part of that. And it was. I came away, so I felt lots of trepidation about what's going on in D.C. and the uncertainty, and I came away, I wouldn't say feeling good, but I came away feeling better than I did going in. There's huge value to Story County being part of this. In fact, I'm going to suggest that in the future we talk about expanding our participation in this, and I'll save that for some other time for us to have that conversation. Lots and lots of value, and worth us doing. That's all I have. We have a staff meeting in 26 minutes in this room. If there's nothing further for the good of the order, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
To adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.